There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
This is Dr. Lou Caponosi sitting in for Sean Sullivan, who's in D.C. in the real swamp. So I really want to thank Sean for the opportunity to sit in for him, and I'm hoping that we're delivering a good show for in his state. I'll tell you something. What Sean does every day is just amazing when you really think about how much preparation goes into this and the support he gets from Dalton and the rest of the crew here. It's just it's a good team effort. So I'm glad to be a short part of this team effort. Listen, we just got finished with the state agitator, Jim Ziegler, who talked a little bit about the toll business and what's going on and the fact that we really need to make sure people come out tomorrow morning at, I think it's at 10 o'clock at... City Hall and Spanish Fort for the Eastern Shore MPO meeting, just to make sure that those folks stay on focus and don't waver and continue to move in the direction of killing this toll. I also want to welcome my good friend, I almost said Jim Ziegler. Okay, I got Jim Ziegler on the mind. Kevin Spriggs is waiting to come on, and Kevin, I really appreciate that you're taking some time out to go over this issue that you and I have been involved with since really May, and we've seen some success, we've seen some problems, but nevertheless, at this particular juncture, what I'd like people to hear from you is the direction we're going in now that we seem to have the toll, you know, under control. Obviously, anything can happen. But given where we are and given what we've been saying, people want to hear solutions. Jim Ziegler said, you know, some people on Block the Toll want to just go forward with a bridge, not a Taj Mahal. But then others are saying something along the lines of, well, let's just fix the tunnels and things like that. I don't necessarily think that we have to get into a discussion about those two approaches, but I do think it's important for people to understand where we're coming from in terms of providing a solution that will work. So what are your thoughts along those lines?
Thanks, Dr. Lou, for having me on. And really, you have to look at the two fundamental problems that we have. And number one is kind of obvious, that the federal government is not contributing significant amount of funds and support for this project. And we all know this is an important coast-to-coast highway. So that in itself is problem number one. And then problem number two is ALDOT's unwillingness to commit funds. And the way that the toll was proposed with these P3 groups, I have to say that this is, I call this the grand larceny plan, where ALDOT was going to get the P3s to build this and charge us tolls and then reduce potentially the state contribution down to zero in the bidding process. In other words, zero funds from ALDOT. We pay toll for 55 years, and then our gas tax money, both old and the new, goes to Montgomery to be redistributed to other areas.
Well, Kevin, I mean, I think you're spot on with that analysis. The problem is Director Cooper is still in the saddle, and, you know, is there going to be any hope on our part that we can change their approach to this? I mean, we've talked about the fact that, you know, between Mobile and Baldwin counties, you're probably going to have about $100 million a year in gas tax revenue. That could certainly be, you know, part of any you know, long-range solution. I mean, but do you really think that they're going to be willing to really think about that?
Well, we've heard from a number of people that have suggested on the Block the Toll Facebook page and that we should wait because federal transportation bill that, you know, whether the Republicans win or the Democrats win, it just sounds like when the federal government moves, you know, our chances of getting additional funding from problem number one, federal government not contributing funding, but that problem might get better by waiting. And definitely, I don't know if people from South Alabama can trust this administration in Montgomery anymore, given the fact that, you know, they, to me, they were just trying to loot the entire gas tax contribution that we make and let us pay toll forever. I mean, that, you know, do you really, I mean, is there people in office right now that you can really trust? And right now, I don't. But now there are up-and-comers in Montgomery that we can start to work with, and we can show them how in other states that even if a P3 was involved, you know, the state still had to produce significant amount of funding, and not just upfront funding, but funding over the life cycle of the project. And, you know, those projects seem to have been, you know, accepted by the people in those parts of the countries where that's been done.
Yeah, I think the two examples you have there are, one is the Elizabeth River Tunnel, and then the the I-4 in Orlando. And
that's right. The it's called the Ultimate I-4, which is sounds like a comic book name, but
right.
But it's definitely an interesting project. $2.3 billion, 21 miles of interstate through downtown Orlando. The state of Florida, $900 million, but not in one single year, over 6 years during the construction process, $900 million commitment, and then $70 million a year for 40 years through the life cycle of the project. And there were tolls involved, but they were only tolls on express lanes, and those tolls went to the state of Florida, not back to some hedge fund in New York.
Well, you see, that this is the frustration that I think we've all experienced. Those examples were out there for people to see, and yet ALDOT went in the exact opposite direction, especially in terms of, you know, a high toll right from the get-go. And I think that the lesson from the ERT was very clear that, you know, unless the state was going to put in money to bring that toll down, you were going to have PR problems. And that's exactly what happened with it. And I think that, you know, the Orlando example is another example where there was a degree of creativity in there. As you suggested, the express lanes, you know, just run right through. But my understanding is that even the tolls there were going to be determined on the basis of how much traffic was being used. You know, more traffic, higher tolls. They're trying to reduce the tolls reduce the traffic so people would get through Orlando pretty quickly. So
yeah,
in the end,
the concept is a guaranteed service for the express lanes. So if the express lanes start to get overcrowded, then, of course, the tolls go up, and that creates, less desire for the public to use the tolls. And that's an experimental concept where it's not certain that that's going to work, but at least there's something new that they're trying on that project. But the point is the state commitment of recurring funding. Not one time during this whole discussion about ALDOT's Grand Larceny plan did we ever hear that they would be willing to commit recurring funding over the 55-year life cycle of the project.
Well, Kevin, you know, you've illuminated what we consider to be important aspects of a solution down the road. And I think that while we need to look in the rearview mirror to make sure that we don't have a repetition of these problems, the reality is that you've given everyone some great ideas about going forward. I really appreciate you coming on today. I know you're really busy, and we'll be talking to you later today, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Kev. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Luke Campanosi sitting in for Sean. just had a really good discussion here. Actually, two discussions about the toll. One with State Auditor Jim Ziegler, and then one with my good friend Kevin Spriggs. I think that, you know, going forward with this, we've got to be cognizant of good solutions. We can't be looking in the rearview mirror completely. But clearly there were some issues that need to be addressed, and I think that we've adequately done that. But going forward, we need to make sure that they're listening to us, and we're in the process of running another ad tomorrow in Lanyap. I'm not running any more ads on 106.5, but we will have a good ad in Lanyap that you can take a look at and get a sense of direction from where at least the Common Sense campaign is moving in this direction. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I wanted to, you know, have our congressional district candidates on. And again, I think it's important for all of us to get a sense of direction from them on a couple of the key issues that are going on nationally. So I'm not going to ask them about the local bridge issues and things like that. But I do think, you know, the fact that Jerry Carl, Bill Hightower, and Chris Pringle have all agreed to be here today is really an outstanding testament to their willingness to meet the public, talk about the issues in an unrehearsed way, so that you can get a sense of who these folks are. Let me just give a little ad here. Common Sense Campaign will be hosting all three of these candidates on October 17th at 6 p.m. at Homestead Village in Fairhope. So I think that the forum that we have for them is going to be an important one, and I do think that you know, making sure that everyone gets the word about that, we'll make sure we get it out there. But let me welcome our first guest, Jerry Carl, County Commissioner in Mobile. Jerry, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. Appreciate you giving me a chance to get on.
Not a problem. Glad to do it. Jerry, just in about take a minute or two just to kind of give everyone a little background about who you are, what you've done, and why you're running for this office.
Well, I'm a lifetime businessman that's I feel like I've done well. I wanted to give back to my community. I ran for county commission. I won. I've spent the last 7 years serving Mobile County. Now I want to take it to a different level, go to a federal level and represent all six counties that are in District 1. We've got some infrastructure issues. We've certainly got some veteran health care issues. Well, we've got some big issues on a national basis that needs people that are used to getting the job done, not just talking about it.
Well, Jerry, thank you. That's a good opening statement. Let me just get into some of these issues that you've mentioned here. One of the questions has to do with foreign policy. And without getting into a specific solution to various foreign policy questions, one of the things that I do think is important, though, is to have an understanding of the direction that foreign policy is going in. So when Bolton left and Mattis left before him, Trump pretty much has two people who have been identified as, let's say, hawkish, more of an interventionist, if you want to use it that way. The degree to which I agree and disagree with some of the positions that both Mattis and Bolton had is something that we can talk about. But I also think that Trump has his own approach to foreign policy issues, which, based on his candidacy and what he said during the campaign, certainly suggests that he's not interested in going to war. He doesn't want to be a war president, okay? But not being a war president doesn't mean that, you know, there's still a shark-infested world out there. And so as he addressed at the UN today, I understand, he talked about North Korea, he talked about Iran, he talked about the Chinese, okay? So from a foreign policy standpoint, what is your perspective on this issue about, you know, not necessarily going to war tomorrow, but the degree to which in the real world there are real problems? And if America doesn't do what it has done in the past in terms of leadership, providing the leadership to stand up to dictators, bullies, and outright interventionists, then it seems to me that we're asking for more trouble in the world. I mean, what's your sense of that?
Well, as a father that has sent a son into active combat, Marine Corps, Afghanistan twice, I tell you, my views, I really slow down and look at that twice, if not three times. I'm very cautious about committing boots on the ground when you start talking about war, because we have so many different possibilities other than boots on the ground. Granted, boots on the ground always has to clean up, but I'm very cautious with that. But if I have to align myself with someone, I would say Mad Dog Maddox, and the way he conducted himself in that role, I probably relate to the best. If you're going to fight a war, fight it and win it. Fight it to win. Don't just keep picking at it. And what's going on in the Mideast, I get very testy about, because, again, I spent 16 months of my life sweating out, you know, a child making it back in one piece. And, you know, we need to bring a quick end to it in some way, or get out and let them deal with it themselves. I'm not real big on committing boots on the ground at this point.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's certainly a fair assessment, and certainly from the perspective of someone who, you know, had a loved one having to deal with the possibility of, you know, losing your loved one, that is perfectly understandable, and I think it's a reasonable position. Let me transition to another national issue. This question of impeachment. I mean, the Democrats are going crazy with it. They tried to do something with collusion. It went nowhere. Then they've tried other things. And now this latest thing is, you know, his discussion with the Ukrainians. And I know that this morning Sean had Quinn Hillier on, and they went through a pretty detailed discussion of this whole issue. I'm not so interested in trying to, you know, find out exactly the details of where you stand on the particulars of that, but the broader question of impeachment, they just happen to settle on this particular issue. That's the next thing that they're going to do, according to what I heard on the radio at 4 o'clock.
Dr. Lou, they have nothing else to sell.
Yeah,
they can't point at health care and say we've improved health care. They can't point at the stock market and say the stock prices went up. They can't point at unemployment and say the unemployment went down. All they have to sell is anger, and the anger they're focusing in on this impeachment issue. And I'll tell you the dangerous thing about this latest one. When the president talks to a foreign leader, yes, it's recorded. It's recorded for a reason. But to release that recording, regardless if it's right or wrong, that tears down a lot of the future conversations that we have with diplomats worldwide. They will be much, much more cautious and being sincere and honest and open with us in future conversations with them. They know they are recorded, but the idea that the Congress can force the president to turn an open conversation from a diplomacy standpoint will be horrible in the future. Horrible.
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right about that. The Democrats don't have anything to run on, and this is all that they can do. But still, Let's just kind of follow up on that. The national dialogue has gotten so, how you want to describe it, I mean, it's actually so polarized that polarization doesn't even come close to, you know, an adequate description of where we are with this. What is your sense about this, and what would you recommend in terms of dealing with the kind of outright hatred that we're seeing from the other side? In terms of, you know, what was it that Biden was chastised for saying that Mike Pence was a decent guy? I mean, what are we really talking about?
You know, we've got to get some people elected to go up there that can actually sit down and carry on a conversation without name-calling to one another. I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats. We've got to develop a relationship. It's okay to disagree. It's okay for you and I to disagree on politics. But the way it's become in Washington is either one way or the other, and there's no middle of the road. There's nothing that anyone can agree on unless it's one side or the other. And I think that's becoming pretty evident in all society, and that's where we're having some serious breakdown. I believe social media plays a huge role in that. I think a lot of people that normally would not have an opinion, now they get on social media, And they really spill their guts on some of these issues.
Exactly.
That really we need, as leaders, we have to sit down and we have to work together to be in a leadership role, not fighting one another. Everyone up in Washington that I see, they want to be heard. They want to be seen. But they don't want to sit down and get the people's work done. And getting the people's work done means actually communicating across the aisle.
Well, I mean, you know, that, once again, we get back into, you know, the whole question of working across the aisle. And, I mean, I think conceptually it sounds fine, but how do you work across the aisle with some people who are just, I mean, the Green New Deal, it's going to destroy the economy.
Oh, that's ridiculous. And that's, but again, that's all they have to sell of these crazy ideas that would, that even, I don't believe that they believe them.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at the Democrat Party, do you really believe 50 or 60% of the Democrat Party even believes in these ideas? But we've got to find a way where we can try to work together, where we can work to resolve an issue. Immigration is a huge example. We have got to work on an issue. Building a wall is great, but the people that truly want to come over here for good reasons, we need those people. We want those people. What we don't want, the sex slave traffic. We don't want the drug traffic. We don't want dumping Mexican prisoners at the door and having them cross the border to get rid of them. That's what we don't want.
Well, Jerry, I completely agree, but the problem is the Democratic Party wants to have more of these people. I mean, my understanding is that we're having over 1 million legal immigrants come in every year, and yet that's
if we can identify half a dozen of those Democrats that will start disagreeing with some of this this straight party line
right.
stuff, I think that's the place to start.
Yeah, and I think part of that's already taken place with these Democrats who won in these districts.
It is, and because I don't know, I mean, he's talking this Green New Deal. I don't know of anybody, Democrat or Republican, that agrees with this Green New Deal. The numbers from just a mathematics standpoint don't make sense.
Right. Well,
They're just making noise. They want to get in front of a camera. They want to be heard. They want to be seen again instead of doing work. Just sit down and getting it done.
Well, Jerry, thank you for your time for coming on. I think it's been a good opportunity for people to hear for someone who has been around here, done a lot, and you know, wish you luck in your endeavor for this seat. Take care. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. Bye-bye.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Dr. Lou Caponosi, welcome you back again. I appreciate the fact that I'm here today filling in for Sean. We just finished talking to a candidate for Congressional District 1, Jerry Carl, and I'm going to welcome former State Senator Bill Hightower, who is also a candidate in that district. Bill, thank you for coming on today.
Oh, glad to be with you, Doctor. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Let's just get right to it. I gave Jerry an opportunity to say who he was and why he was running, so why don't you take a minute or two to do that, then we'll get into some questions.
Certainly. I was raised in Mobile, and I was pleased to serve in the Alabama State Senate. And I had a wonderful go of it, and I think I accomplished some things. You know, I wanted to help Mayor Stimson rebuild a better Mobile. I wanted to focus on Baldwin County to solve their infrastructure problems, build the Gulf State Park, and get that mega site going, and then expand the port. And one of the issues that was really big when I first got into the Senate was homeowners insurance reform. So these issues I worked on intensely as a state senator. And I want to take that same energy and that approach with me to Washington, D.C., a business-minded approach, because In my past, I've been in manufacturing most of my life. I've learned a whole lot about how things can run better than they're running right now.
Well, Bill, I think that's an excellent way to introduce yourself to the audience, and I think that you know, your background certainly lends itself to what you're attempting to do with going to Washington. Let me just ask you this, then. We're talking about foreign policy questions that I proposed to Jerry Carl. If you look at the Bolton-Mattis approach to foreign policy, a little bit more hawkish than perhaps what Trump is, the question comes up, you know, really, if you are, as I would characterize it, the world is a shark-infested place. There are going to be places that U.S. intervention, I would argue, is necessary. But I also can see where Trump doesn't want to be a war president. So just from the standpoint of what you've seen in terms of your own philosophy, how would you weigh, you know, the philosophical battle between the hawk, Bolton, and lesser hawk, Mattis, but certainly someone like Trump, who is very wary of repeating what he considers to be the mistakes of, you know, Bush 43 with Iraq and lesser so Afghanistan?
Well, one of the focus areas I want to have when I get to Congress is I want to focus on armed services so I can protect our military footprint in throughout Alabama. You know, you mentioned Bolton, Secretary Bolton. One of the things he said a long time ago, I liked his style in this when he was the on the Secretary of the UN, representing as ambassador to UN. He said that for any country that votes against the United States, he's going to reduce their support by $100 million. I've always liked that style.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Look, they're only going to respond by strength, and we don't have to be willy-nilly about it. But, you know, I think the president is trying to get the right balance. He's a New York business guy. He treats people like that. He approaches things like that. And because of that, he gets a lot done. But I'll tell you that because I want us to have a strong military and a strong position. But at the same time, Doctor, I think we've spread ourselves too thin. We have arms and legs into every part of the world. And people are just taking us for granted. So I'm glad to see a little shakeup occur. The balance, though, has to be done through strength. You can't do it through weakness. They're not going to do it because they like you. They're going to do it because you have strength. Well, and that's what I would propose that we need to do right now and in the future.
Well, I think that Mattis certainly has articulated that diplomacy is based on strength. So along those lines that, you know, what you just said makes a lot of sense. Let me just ask you this in terms of, you know, a specific foreign policy question. Let's just say that we have this problem with the Iranians over the Saudi Arabian business. And it looks very clear that the Iranians, even though they said the Houthi rebels were responsible, that's probably a lie. And, you know, so everyone pretty much says it's the Saudis who are responsible. I mean, the Iranians. So the question then becomes, what is the proper response based on what your level of understanding is and what you're willing to do? Because, you know, the argument here is that the Iranians are testing us, they are fighting the sanctions, and this is their way to fight back by doing things which will require some sort of American response. So I think Trump is very wary of, you know, doing those kinds of responses which could lead to something else. So what's your sense of that?
Well, I've worked in the Middle East. I have a good understanding kind of Middle East politics in some regard. The way I view it is we need to empower the Saudis to take care of Iran, and we don't need to intervene in that. But there's this dynamic of the Russians, you see, and Putin. Now, Putin's playing a game, and he is very good at those games. We see it by their flybys of our aircraft carriers and our military personnel when they come too close to our vessels. And, you know, that's just fluff. I don't like it. But what we've got to do is be able to realize that there is a player behind the curtain, and that is called Russia. But the way to deal with that is to empower the Saudis, because it was on their territory, their sovereign territory, where this attack occurred. It wasn't on American soil. We need to empower the Saudis to go do that. And I think we're in the middle of doing that. We do give them military aid, and we do help them.
Yeah.
In that regard.
And they've sent more people over there with air defense capabilities and all like that. Okay, let me shift away from foreign policy. I asked Jerry about the domestic polarization that you see that is so apparent in our politics today, where, you know, when they're chastising Biden for saying that Mike Pence was a decent guy. I mean, how low does it go? So what's your sense of this, and what can you bring to the table to move this in a different direction, if at all possible?
Doctor, there has to be a standard of goodness, and we've got to treat people like they're human. And even when that isn't existing in these dialogues, and the news shouts it out like it, there's no goodness at all, I know that there are good people in Congress. They're not all evil. They are there on a sacrificial basis, and they want to try to do the right thing. The best thing we can do, let's win the House back. Let's get our Republican U.S. Senator back, get Doug Jones moved out of his position, and then let's start moving ahead with the repeal of Obamacare, with trying to deal with some of the huge financial burdens that the federal government's taking on, and our deficits just increasing more and more. I do believe you've got to have relationship. You got to try to build relationship. And, you know, I've done that in the Alabama State Senate. But I tell you something else I noticed in the Alabama State Senate. People don't treat you right because you're a nice guy. They do it because you have power. And it's kind of the Machiavellianist element of our government. But we've got to position ourselves in a position of strength in the House and in the Senate with some great initiatives that are going to benefit everybody in the United States.
Well, I agree with all that. The only problem is, though, is that you've got people who are so far to the left today that, and I, as I mentioned to Jerry, this Green New Deal, I mean, take your pick of the Looney Tunes approaches that they're taking. So when you're dealing with this level of absolute craziness, how do you reach across the aisle and figure this out? I mean, it seems to me that that may just be a bygone day. I mean, if Biden can't say that Pence is a decent guy, I mean, what does that really say about the whole process?
Well, we're Western society, and we've always built our government and what we do on truth. And I'm always going to argue for the truth. There's people that want to push aside the truth and shut down the truth. But you got to have somebody that is able to articulate that, Doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever we send to Congress has to be able to outline why socialism is a bad policy. It just doesn't work, and we've seen it over and over again. They need to be able to give logical, informed positions, because in the end, we have to win the argument. Even though the left just wants to shut us down, they don't want to talk about what's truth, we still have to argue from the perspective of this is the right thing to do. I believe there is the right thing to do. I'm a conservative, and the reason I'm a conservative because I think conservatism works.
Well, I think
not because it's just a fashionable thing. I was voted consistently among the top three most conservative senators in the Alabama Senate, and I want to take those ideals with me to D.C.
Right. And listen, I think that, you know, the question about the truth really is central to all of this. The problem is, you know, figuring out how the truth can actually get out when you have a news media that seems to be wedded to, you know, an adversarial, in fact, it's even worse than adversarial. It is absolutely delegitimating in terms of what it does to the truth. They don't care about the truth. So I think that the situation we're finding ourselves in this polarized world, along with social media and other things like that, do contribute to a sense that this is just out of control, and that it really does boil down to people like yourself and Jerry Carl and Chris Pringle, who have their head on their shoulders and can go forward and deal with some of these problems in a rational way.
Well, I am very glad that they are investigating Facebook and Instagram for their monopolistic tendencies and how they're suppressing truth and how they're suppressing other parties, how they can deliver for a Democratic president, huge block of votes. This is scary. And if we get in, and they are engaging in antitrust activity, there's just no doubt about it. And this is where most people get their news.
Yeah,
and
it
I
is.
Think this is one of the angles that we're going to have to deal with. It's not going to be easy. It's technology, and technology is always moving so fast. But we need to be able to break up the monopoly of these conduits of information.
Well, Bill, I know that I've kept you on for a while here, and we're about to go to a break, but I want to, you know, thank you for, you know, being on and letting people know a little bit more about who you are and what your thinking is on some of these issues. Thank you so much.
Thanks for what you do, Dr. Lou, and go to BillHightower.com to learn more about me.
Okay.
Thanks, Doctor. Have a great day. Appreciate
Same
you.
Too. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, there we are. Going to a break.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, this is Dr. Lou Campagnosi sitting in for Sean, who's up in D.C. in the swamp. Hopefully he gets back in one piece. Listen, we just had two really good discussions with candidates for Congressional District Number 1. Jerry Carr was first, then Bill Hightower was second. I now have in waiting Representative Chris Pringle, who has been a representative in the State House here for the last 25 years. Chris, welcome, and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. I appreciate it. But you remember, during that 25 years, I took 12 years off. I was out for 12 years, so I haven't been in quite that long.
Oh, well, my bust. I thought for sure you had that 25 years. Okay, well, you've got 12 years. That's certainly enough time to see what the swamp does up there in Montgomery that you can, you know, fight when you get to D.C., that's for sure.
Oh, exactly. But, yeah, during that 12 years is when I really grew my real estate and construction business. You know, I'm a small business owner. I'm in real estate, and I'm a contractor. I'm a home builder and a general contractor. Well, so I know what it's like to have to sign the front of the check at the end of the week and balance those budgets.
Exactly. Well, listen, why don't you just take the first couple of minutes to just give the folks an opportunity to hear a little bit more about your background and why you're running for Congress at this time.
Sure. I appreciate that. You know, I grew up in the district. I'm a realtor, a general contractor, and a home builder. I was elected to the House in 1994, and I served two terms. I left in 2002 and spent the next 12 years, like I said, building my business. And in 2014, my old House seat came available, so I ran again. My first term, I was the minority leader of the House, and mm-hmm. when I went back this time, I'm now chairman of state government and chairman of the Committee on Reapportionment. And during my second tenure, you know, I've built a reputation for being a reformer. I've repealed almost 350 laws. I've done away with almost 77 state boards, agencies, and commissions. I've rewritten the code on the examiner public accounts to bring true accountability to the state and our finances. And I'm working on more legislation to bring more transparency and accountability to government.
Well, I tell you, the fact that I know that you've said this in a couple of different places where I've seen you, that you've killed, 320-something bills that are in Montgomery, I think that's just a great testament to the kind of work you've been doing up there in Montgomery.
Well, if you read a piece of legislation like I do, and you filter it through, if this law passes, whose right are we taking away, or who's going to pay for this? You begin to understand we have probably too many laws on the books right now. We need to downsize government, particularly government regulations. Yeah. They're just out of control.
Exactly. Well, listen, let's concentrate on not so much Montgomery, but on what's going on in the swamp in D.C. Let me just ask you this. The first question that I posed to the other two candidates was this issue about foreign policy. If you look at Bolton and Mattis, they seem to be a little bit more hawkish than Trump is. But you also see that Trump has an understanding that there are times when force is necessary. He certainly threatened North Korea in 2017 with, you know, I've got a bigger button than you and things like that. So the question really is, given the fact that the world is a shark-infested place and we do have issues with the Iranians and with the Chinese and with the Russians and with the North Koreans, what is your basic approach to foreign policy in terms of intervention, non-intervention? Where do you see yourself at this particular point? And if you were in D.C., since there is going to be an issue with this Iranian business over their attack on Saudi Arabia, I mean, where do you think you would fall given your philosophical approach to foreign policy?
Well, I agree with President Trump and President Reagan that, you know, it's peace through strength. You know, President Obama went all over the country and was weak and apologized for America's greatness. And we now have a president that understands that our greatest strength is, is our military strength and our economic power. And we need to exert that. This country has done more to help people around the world than any other country in the history of the world. We've saved more nations and provided freedom all over the world for people. And Iran, they are just nibbling around looking for weakness. And they're just trying to bait us into a reaction. You know, if you read Sun Tzu, The Art of War, it'll teach you you know, the best battle is the battle you win without fighting. And we don't need to be baited into something with Iran. We support Saudi Arabia. We give them a lot of military strength. And they were attacked, and I think they need to respond to that attack.
Well, you know, I agree with you that we don't need to be baited into something, but the reality is that because of the sanctions we're imposing on the Iranians, they feel as though this is their way of fighting back without necessarily going to war. So it is a tricky proposition in terms of, well, you know, they destroyed our Navy drone. They've done all the things inside, you know, the Persian Gulf with tankers. And then, of course, then they pulled this thing with Saudi Arabia. So the real question at this point is, you know, from a position of strength, do we let this pass, or do we, you know, have a proportional response, take out some of their oil fields? We've done that in the past, and in the 80s, we took out some of their oil platforms in the Persian Gulf. So what is your sense of that, though, in terms of a proportional response without necessarily being, you know, baited into something that will lead us into, you know, another big war?
Exactly. I mean, we need to move cautiously because, you know, Iran is operating with the help of Putin. You know, he's behind all this. He's the number one enemy of this country. I think our sanctions are hurting Iran bad.
For sure, they are.
Under them, and we need to keep the pressure up on them and on Russia. I mean, it's you know, the response ought to be measured, and it ought to be appropriate. And the problem you run into for people like you and I is we don't have security clearances. So we don't really have the full picture of what's going on and what's available with our military, what kind of strike we can use against the Iranians. Is it a computer hack? Is it a missile?
Supposedly we've been doing cyber attacks on them, but that's certainly one way of doing it. Well, let me just get to another. We're going to run out of time here shortly. I mentioned to the other two candidates this issue of political polarization. What is your sense of that, and what can you as an individual do to mitigate the really incredible positions that we're finding when people like Biden are being attacked for saying that Pence is a decent guy?
You know, I went to Washington a couple weeks ago, and I haven't been there in years and years, and I was struck by how young the people were. And what I kind of discovered was there's a lot of very intelligent people with very little wisdom. And what I picked up on is everybody's fighting for the battle today. They're trying to get on TV. They're trying to get the news bite for today with little concern for long-term consequences to our government and our country. And I think people like me need to go up, sit down, and start trying to work with reasonable people and let, you know, AOC and these leftists, you know, the Gang of Four that are just clamoring for attention, let them just go out and play out on television. But let's work together and come up with some real solutions to some real problems.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being so succinct here at the end. I'm about to run out of time. I appreciate your time for coming in. Good luck with your next meeting, and good luck with your candidacy for this position. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. Good talking to you.
Sure. Take care. Well, guys and girls, that about does it for us today. Had a great time with Dalton and talking to everyone, and appreciate Sean's, you know, trust in me to be able to give his audience a decent show, which I think we have today. Appreciate it very much. Take care. Sean will be back tomorrow. Take care. Bye.